This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. I don't normally do this. Seth, what the hell's so funny?
I just feel really bad. We were talking about our listener, Coach Middlescreen. Yeah. That's not his real name, but he threw shot at UCLA.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I don't feel that bad. Okay, I don't feel that. He threw shot at, yeah. We were kind of picking on the Pac-12, and I forgot. I thought I was making fun of UCLA, but I was actually making fun of Berkeley. So,
Yeah, okay.
He didn't go to Berkeley. He's not that smart. He's smart enough to go to UCLA, but he's not smart enough to go to Berkeley.
Well, good thing you laid off of him by saying how dumb he is.
He's a pretty bright kid. He's diabolical. He was the one that had everybody convinced that he was a Bill O'Brien burner account.
That's
remember?
Right. He was Jacko469. Yeah.
Yeah. He had
all these people
convinced.
That's right.
Oh, no. Okay, you know what? I take it back. He's super intelligent because he based his strategy for getting everybody, including some radio hosts, to buy into that was that he said that people love solving a puzzle. So he would throw out these little clues just enough to make it look like it was definitely a Bill O'Brien burner account. Like, so to where people were so proud of themselves for solving the puzzle that they thought that they're invested in it. It's got to be Bill O'Brien.
Or
it was just a bunch of stuff thrown out by a diabolical Cal shot put thrower that made you believe that was a Bill O'Brien burner account.
He might have been able to get into Berkeley. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, except who wants to go play for Berkeley?
He might have been able to teach at Berkeley with that level of diabolicalness.
Nah. I don't think he's quite that far to the left.
Okay, yeah, no, you're right. That's true. So the Astros win last night. 5-game losing streak over. That was. Let's hope that never happens again. Seth, I was looking up the numbers after the game on Sunday when they were 6-9. I'm going, okay. When was the last time we felt like this as an Astro fan? Like when? Because I know it's only 6-9, but it's a quarter of the way through the season. It is the equivalent of being, you know, like 18-27 or something like that.
Oh, I was going to – my first thought was 2016 because they had a disappointing start that year and they didn't make the playoffs. But I don't think it was quite – if you say a quarter of the way through the season, it wasn't like this a quarter way through the season.
Well, the last time they were even 3 games below 500 was more recently than you'd think. It was actually last season. They were 2-5 to start the year, but that team went on to win 10 games in a row and they were soon 12-5. So
right,
that ain't
right.
happening with this team. I don't think this is the first of a 10-game winning streak. If it is, then I'll do some crazy things. But the last time that we've been deep enough into a season where you go, ooh, okay, this is not going the way we want. Like, I mean, the combination of the way the Astros have played so far, the way that the injury bug has hit them to where you feel like, okay, this is just a bunch of guys who are underperforming and they'll get out. Like, no, Verlander is gone and Osuna is gone and Springer's hurt and Yordan isn't here yet and all these things. It doesn't, you know, they've been 3-4 games behind to start the season of the A's or whoever else. The A's look really, really good. The Astros look very average. And this looks like it could stay this way for a while. When was the last time they felt like that? And 2016 is the right answer. The last time, other than that slow start last year, where they were 3 games under .500, this deep into the season, was in 2016, where they were 33-36. Now, I guess the good news is that team did go on to win 84 games. I mean, they pulled out of the nosedive. They didn't make the playoffs. They missed the playoffs by a game or two, I think. So it wound up not being a bad team. Now, this is a team that has a different standard, though, than a 2016 team. The 2016 team was just trying to win a division at that point or just make the playoffs again. This is a team that is in the middle of a window that we were all told was going to be contending for a World Series ever. I think not told like we didn't believe it. we all believed, like, 2020, 2021, this is the window. You know, we don't know what the window is after that, but this is the window right now. It doesn't feel like a window right now.
This is a team that even by people who despise the Astros had the Astros as the third best team in Major League Baseball heading into the season. And I think firmly in third place because one of the points of concern was the bullpen, right? You just and everything just got more extreme. You felt, okay, you lost Garrett Cole, but you're getting Lance McCullers back, but we didn't realize that Justin Verlander was going to be gone. You're already concerned about the depth of the bullpen, and then, oh my gosh, lo and behold, Osuna's probably out for the season. Everything got really, really bad really, really fast. And now it's taken me a little while, Sean. I was reeling for a bit. Where now I'm starting to feel a little bit of that old school hunger like we did back in 2015 and 2016, where it's kind of fun to try to figure out just what is this baseball team. And man, all it takes is for a few guys to step up and you could be sitting really, really pretty, except with the added benefit of knowing that the lineup is capable of much more. There's more offense out there. There's untapped run production. Even though they've produced runs, but a lot of it has been against the bad teams. Like, there's untapped offense in this team right now. So it's like a 2016 plus version.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. You know, when you're talking about that, Seth, and I'm going, okay, let's take a look at this team, not in terms of what it can't do anymore, but what it can do. You know, like I think of that line from Apollo 13 where Ed Harris is the head of mission control there and they're trying to get the astronauts back from outer space and all the little minions there are like, well, this is broken and that blew up and they can't do this. And he's like, listen, I don't want to know what it can't do. I want to know what it can do. And they have to come in with all these different random spare parts and somehow get them back home. That's a little bit where the Astros are. And they're 5.5 games back of the A's a quarter of the way into the season. Like it is... If you are thinking of this team performing at a high, high level this year, it is a bit of an emergency time early on. And so if I ask myself, what is it that this team can do? I say to myself, okay, McCullers' performance last night was very encouraging because you need two hammers at the top of the rotation. So you got Greinke, you got McCullers, and if somebody from the Belak, Javier, Fromber, Urquidy when he comes back, if they can get a guy and a half out of that group – and the bullpen just stays decent, then these guys are going to hit eventually.
Right. Oh, and aside from that, too, like since we'll take 2016, they ended up third in the division. They didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
It was just a humdrum year. It looked like a little bit of, okay, 2015 was nice, but we fell back to earth. We'll see what happens. A quarter of the way through the season in 2016, their team OPS was 732.
That's bad.
Right now, a quarter of the way through the season or a little bit more, it's at 828. Yeah. You know, a quarter of the way through the season in 2016, their team batting average was, I think it was about 228.
Wow.
Right now, it's 279.
Yeah.
So it's like you've already, even without the offense being what we know it's capable of being, you're in a much different situation than 2016.
Yeah, there are things there that just need to start working, and if they do, and they can't take many more hits health-wise. Like, the Springer thing hurts because now your outfield, and Springer's hurt, and Brantley's still dealing with the quad, so two-thirds of your outfield every day. Really, two-thirds. I mean, your outfield yesterday was Tucker, Straw, and Reddick from left to right. I mean, those are three guys who are just you cringe when they all come to the plate right now. You know, that's your outfield. So,
yeah.
Seth, you know what? Where the ratings are through the roof right now? Golf. Golf is
getting really
good ratings. And, you know, that the PGA Championship was this weekend. It was the first major of the year in August, oddly enough. And this got a little run because Brooks Koepka was going for the three-peat, the old Wanamaker Trophy three-peat, and he said some things that got headlines as trash talk, right, Koepka? He was saying
He pointed out that Dustin Johnson at that point, which ended up being I mean, part of the reason the ratings are so great is you had 10 guys still in contention on the back nine on Sunday with the PGA Championship. It was a tight race. But Brooks Koepka, according to like three different articles that I read, was talking all kinds of smack, saying, "Oh, Dustin Johnson's only won one major."
Yeah,
you know, he didn't mention that he's won 20 tournaments, but it got a whole lot of run. And then I listened to the audio.
Okay, here's the audio.
You know, I just need a solid round, and you know, a lot of the guys on the leaderboard are, you know, I don't think of one, or I guess DJ's only won one, but I don't know the other guys that are up there, but you know, a lot of experience, I guess, is what I can bring to it, and know that I've been in this position quite a few times over the last couple of years, and just play well.
I love that Koepka's getting heat from people, Seth, and couching that as trash talk. By doing the one thing that the same people would probably get angry at others for, citing facts.
Yeah, no, and it was not done in any kind of a dig way, I don't think. He was trying to say, okay, my strength is that I've got experience, and okay, and he was going through his mind, and he's thinking about the guys ahead of him, how many majors have they won, and Dustin Johnson's won one, but it's only one. Like, I guess maybe he could have been more tactful and not brought up and not said only one, but he was more talking about like number of total majors that these guys have won in the group ahead of them, and there's only one major been won before. But then I'm looking at these headlines. The Insider: Brooks Koepka talked trash and it backfired spectacularly. ESPN: Rory McIlroy taken aback by Brooks Koepka's dig.
Now that one makes me. It's one thing for the writers to try to turn it into something it's not, because they're just trying to get paid with their headline porn.
Yeah.
If for McIlroy, you softy, like that's trash talk for another golfer. Shut the hell up.
It's a bad look for golfers when Rory McIlroy is acting like, oh my goodness, oh dear, how somebody protect the China? Goodness. The barbarians are at the gate. Oh my goodness. Out here talking like common athletes.
Yeah.
We're golfers, damn it. Rory.
Seth, it just shows how far we have to go in the sport of golf. That constitutes trash talk. Because I think golf could use a good trash talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They could use a little bit of interest that way.
I was a little disappointed in Brooks Koepka. Now, Brooks Koepka is kind of notoriously standoffish. He doesn't care if he's got any friends. He's walked back the reports that he and Dustin Johnson are friends. Like, who the hell walks back reports of a friendship? People are like, hey, you and Dustin Johnson are friends, huh? I wouldn't say that.
I don't know. That's
so funny. I think you got to remember that when he says something like that, and then when it's printed in when he's got that history and then you see that in print, I guess it does look like trash talk. But look at the headlines. Brooks Koepka, this is from Golf Week. Brooks Koepka throws shade on Dustin Johnson and others. Golf.com. Brooks Koepka jabs Dustin Johnson's major championship total.
That's unbelievable. All right.
You know what I'll say, though? Maybe Rory McIlroy is doing exactly what you're wanting, Sean. Is he's kind of
stirring
he's
the
trying
pot?
To stoke. Yeah, stirring the
okay,
pot. Kinda.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what?
I watched that 30 for 30 as I've gone through like old 30 for 30s, and I'm trying to, you know, just learn things about different sports during this pandemic.
Yeah.
The Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt rivalry back in the day, how much of that, I never realized how much of that was basically just orchestrated by Dale Earnhardt as a way to be like, hey, look, let's act like we hate each other, and we'll go ahead. And I think Dale Earnhardt did kind of, like, there was a little bit of, like, what's this California kid doing? But he really played it up because it was good for ratings, right? It was good for sponsorships. It was really good for
all that. Yeah, there's an entire entertainment genre built on that. It's called wrestling.
Yeah.
that's exactly what that is. It's wrestling.
Earnhardt, that was a really – I think it was a 30 for 30. It might have been something. It really showed how smart Earnhardt was about all that stuff.
Download the Radio.com app. You got the Radio.com Rewind feature. That's a great way to keep up with all of our coverage of Texans training camp, which is going on right now. We got you covered all the way up into and through the 2020 season here on the flagship of the Houston Texans, Sports Radio 610. Speaking of Texans, there is a former Texan who has told a teammate, hey, you know who you should talk to about your game and maybe hone your game is Arian Foster. We're going to let you know how this particular player is succeeding or not in getting in touch with Arian Foster to talk about football. That's next. So, Seth, I saw a story yesterday. Our old friend Dave Zangaro. Remember Dave worked for CSN here in Houston? covered the Texans here. He moved back to Philadelphia.
Dave Zangaro, yes.
Yeah. He covers the Eagles now. And Miles Sanders is a running back for the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing this up because I forgot. During the break, I was planning on watching some Miles Sanders highlights.
Yeah.
And instead, I got sidetracked by one of our listeners sent us an incredible Brooks Koepka impression by somebody on Instagram.
And Tiger Woods. That Tiger Woods impression is money, too.
But doing a bunch of golf interviews.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, so Miles Sanders, you will not need to have seen highlights, Seth, in order to share your opinion on this. But Miles Sanders, as we know, he's a young running back for the Eagles that they've got high hopes for. Drafted him out of Penn State, had a pretty good rookie year last year. One of his teammates is Brandon Brooks, who is a former Texan, was a teammate of Arian Foster's for a few years here in Houston from 2012 through 2014. And he's out for the season with an Achilles, but he's around the team still. And he is very high on Miles Sanders, coming off an impressive rookie year. And Brandon Brooks couldn't help but think about one of his former teammates, Arian Foster, when he watched Miles Sanders. Mm-hmm. Quote, "Miles is really coming into his own," Brooks told NBC Sports Philadelphia. "The one thing I did with Miles this offseason was I actually hooked him up with Arian. He reminds me of Arian Foster, the way he runs and the way he can catch out of the backfield. He can really do it all. I think y'all remember, when Arian was on top of his game, he couldn't be touched by any running back." I think that's a really good assessment of Arian Foster by Brandon Brooks there, Seth. I've oftentimes said that a healthy Arian Foster is one of the 5 to 10 best running backs I've ever seen. Like, when he's healthy, he was incredible. He was a 3-down back. He could catch. He could run. He was underratedly fast. He was smooth. He was productive. Great in the red zone. All those things. But the funny part about this to me is Brooks trying to hook up Miles Sanders with retired Arian Foster. And the reason I bring up retired Arian Foster is I don't know that retired Arian Foster has the same love for football that active Arian Foster did. And the reason I say that, too, is I read further in the article because he says, yeah, I actually hooked up Miles Sanders with Arian. Well, Zangaro goes on to say, the meeting hasn't happened yet, but Sanders hopes that it does. Sanders on Sunday said he's been trying to get in touch with Foster, but the former All-Pro has a pretty busy schedule. Eventually, though, Sanders is hoping to get that chance. This is a quote from Sanders. I'm definitely trying to get that going and really just pick his brain. That's all I want to do is listen and learn from him. And all I can think of is in knowing what I know about Arian and in observing him in retired life, is I feel like the very last thing Arian Foster feels like doing right now is sitting down with a second-year player to chop up the game of football with him.
I'm actually a little bit surprised that he hasn't been able to get in touch with Arian, only because I've never gotten the sense that that Arian didn't like the game of football itself or anything. I think what Arian got tired of and bored of was talking about the game of football with the media or just answering cliche questions, all that stuff. Like all of the extra crap that goes along with it, that's what Arian got really sick of, and then maybe his words being taken out of context or what have you. I would think that he actually would like sitting down and talking to Miles Sanders, except that it takes a commitment and like to actually think, okay, I'm going to sit down and what's this kid expect of me? How am I going to actually, what advice am I going to give this kid that's actually going to change his game or anything? I bet if Arian Foster hasn't actually changed his phone number, because there's also a chance that Miles Sanders is texting some guy named Bob in Sugarland, you know, and the guy named Bob in Sugarland is just going to milk this thing to hope he gets some fantasy information out of it or something.
I was just going to say, Bob's in a fantasy league. I'm getting texts from Miles Sanders thinking the exact same thing. That's really funny.
So, when I'm watching Miles Sanders and some of his good runs from last year, there's kind of a silkiness to his running style that's a lot like Arian Foster. I think he has the vision, or at least echoes of the vision that Arian Foster had. That's the thing that I was always amazed me about Arian, was his ability to kind of sense the flow of the defense and to know where the cutback lanes were going to be. The Eagles do some very similar things to what a Gary Kubiak system does in the running game, and they do those zone running elements really well. So I think that there is some stuff he could learn. But I also think sometimes maybe in the things that made Arian Foster really, really good were things that aren't necessarily coachable or teachable. And I wonder if maybe Arian feels that. That, like, okay, what am I going to tell this kid that he doesn't already know and the stuff that I, the stuff that he doesn't know, he's got to learn on his own. Okay, young Jedi,
yeah.
It's time for you to, it's time for you to step out into your own little robe.
To be clear, Arian has a, he does have a unique friendliness about him, and I agree with you that I think he would want to sit down and talk to Miles Sanders. I just think he'd rather sit down and talk to Miles Sanders about existentialism and Egypt and the hole in the ozone layer. I feel like football would be, you know, like 10th or 11th on the list of things he'd want to talk about.
Arian has a complex relationship with football.
Yes.
The same way a lot of guys that just want to be more than just football players are known as football players. It's you got a love-hate relationship with it where they want to step away from it and be known as more than that. And yet at the same time, the thing that gives you your notoriety is always going to be that attachment to football.
Yeah. I use his podcast as sort of an example. Like he has football guests on there, but not many. You know,
yeah, and when he has them on, he's largely not talking about a whole lot of, like, so who do you think the third best team in the AFC is
right,
this year?
Remember this? Remember that game and this game? Yeah, yeah.
I can appreciate that. Like, I'm not like a deep thinker like Arian is, but even just when I did my own podcast, you know, I was encouraged to really make it, you know, focus on the things that are marketable about you and everything. And it started to become like, okay, what else? Okay, I've already talked about football for 20 hours this week. What can I talk about football for another hour or two this week?
Right.
And it felt like a death of my soul.
Yeah.
So I just stopped doing it. And I think Arian is a more extreme version of that.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way to look at it. You know what? I got notified on my Facebook account this week of the anniversary of the I'm just trying to be the best teammate I can be interview that he did with the media. Remember that?
Yeah.
With the media scrum.
Well, that was when Bill O'Brien first came in, too.
It was the first training camp for Bill O'Brien, and I it was a picture that I took from above the – I was in that scrum, and I took a picture like this of Eric, you know, like it's radio. I'm doing this for Seth right now. I have my arms up over my head. I'm reaching over the scrum to take pictures of Arian and take video of him giving these answers, and it reminded me of that. I'm thinking, wow, that was 6 years ago, man.
Arian Foster, like the, if you charted out the Arian Foster experience, it felt so much like any movie you've ever seen about a rock band. Like he might as well have been, where initially, oh my gosh, look at this, all the attention and everything. It's awesome, isn't it? And we're just innocent young kids who just want to play our instruments. To then all of a sudden you go through the stage where it all gets a little too much and it goes to their head a little bit. And then all of a sudden the guy gets self-awareness and realize that it's gone to his head and he wants to pull back completely, and all of a sudden you're slumped over on a toilet in France.
Next
that's it's like that. There was kind of that same arc to it, you know.
Yeah. We got you covered on training camp here on Sports Radio 6. I don't know that we're going to get anybody as interesting as Arian Foster on a Zoom conference call the way that thing went, but we got you covered throughout training camp. The radio.com app, great way to carry our training camp coverage with you. And you can use that rewind feature to listen to all the shows. Rewind them if you missed them. Really, really cool. Download that radio.com app today if you haven't already. So the NBA and Major League Baseball have both restarted. And they have been, in a couple of ways, very, very opposite in terms of their restart. Major League Baseball has been a little rocky. Meanwhile, the NBA has been largely flawless. Let's examine the key parts of both of these as Major League Baseball ponders doing something the NBA is already doing when the postseason rolls around. That's next. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. So, Seth, the Major League Baseball execution of their restart to the season has been, it's getting panned in a lot of places, really because of two teams. Three of you want to throw the Indians in there. I mean, nothing's happened with the Indians in terms of their an outbreak on their team, but they had two of their pitchers go out in Chicago after watching what's happened with the Cardinals and the Marlins, maybe having some blatant disregard for the rules. So the outbreaks with the Marlins and the Cardinals, I think, they mute the fact a little bit that 28 of the 30 teams have been awesome at this. They've been really, really good at restarting their sport, but those two issues are big issues, and it does illustrate maybe the difference with their approach versus the approach of the NBA.
Right. I think that, I guess, as you're pointing out, that it's just those two teams, the overall positive test case results are still well below 1%.
They are.
You know, and like, I think if you, that's where, look, New York State is being super restrictive about who's allowed to come into their state right now. And one of the requirements is that the states, if you come from a state that has over a 5% positive test result, or over 10%, I think, for a certain rolling day average, you're not allowed into the state unless you quarantine for 14 days. Like, these organizations are doing a remarkably good job of keeping the numbers way below those levels.
No question. They have. Here's the thing I'm illustrating with baseball versus basketball is, one, baseball has teetered close to them having to put a complete pause on the sport at this point, whereas basketball has just been humming along like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
The second thing with baseball, as I'm comparing the two, is that baseball has had an incredible just sports tragic run of arm injuries on pitchers. Like, this is going to affect some careers ultimately. I think the jaggedness of the season so far, where these guys all showed up at spring training with a normal off season, we're getting ready for a season. All of a sudden, it gets hit. Pause gets hit, and they send you home. And so now you're not even working out in the facility anymore. You're back home, and you're doing God knows what to stay in some sort of baseball shape with no clue as to when the season's going to start up again. And then it's like, okay, when you get the season agreed to start up again, it's like, oh, okay, here's 3 weeks to get ready for the season. And it's destroyed some of these arms. Whereas in basketball, I mean, there have been some injuries, but I don't know that there have been any injuries that I've seen so far where I go, well, that's because of the restart, or that's because of the hiatus. You know, Embiid's got an ankle injury. You know, I don't think that has anything to do with the hiatus or anything.
Yeah,
like
Embiid.
That.
Well, yeah, was Embiid gonna not be fat otherwise? It's
right.
Just that, you know,
I mean, he's an Iron Man. He never gets hurt.
Is Embiid gonna stop falling over? Remember that long article about, like, hey, Embiid falls a lot, but it's on purpose.
Right.
All right, whatever. I'm so sick of hearing about Embiid.
It's really interesting to me how these are the two big sports that have come back so far, and just how one it's been very shaky, both on a stop and start standpoint and a player health standpoint, and the NBA has been a well-oiled machine.
Right.
And the play has been good.
And to illustrate this, in baseball, days 2 through 11, this is an article written a couple days ago in The Athletic, but in days 2 through 11, 14 pitchers were placed on the IL. They didn't use day 1 because that could have been from training camp or whatever. So days 2 through 11, teams were put on the guys were put. It's three times as high as that same window last year. And you know, reasonably, it doesn't feel like it's gotten a whole lot better as injuries continue to pile in. So and we've seen it with Osuna. We've seen it with Verlander. We've seen all that. Where in basketball, we've had injuries, but it's, like you said, it feels more normal. And like, okay, Russell Westbrook, you're going to take all the precautions in the world because of that. I think that I have a hard time maybe blaming baseball per se compared to basketball just because of the nature of the sport. I think it's easier to prepare your body to be closer to basketball shape than it is to prepare yourself to pitch professional baseball.
No doubt. I mean, well, basketball is a sport. You know what these guys do in the offseason, Seth? They play basketball.
Yeah.
You know,
easier is not the right word. It's hard work, but it's more attainable, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it's a more conventional thing to do. You know, I say conventional. I mean, the guys that size are not meant to be running up and down on hardwood for 100 games a year. But in terms of just the soft tissue stuff, the you know, the muscular stuff and things like that, guys, when the season is over, they take a week or two off, and then they go to the gym, and they play more basketball.
Yeah.
Pitchers, I don't think, they get to the end of the season, and then after a week, head to the gym and start throwing 95 miles an hour to hitters.
And the only other thing, I guess, that I'd say maybe as a counterpoint to this is the fact that the IL is shorter now, and that because you do have expanded rosters, there's also the chance that teams are just being more aggressive at putting guys on the IL.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, there's like it's less of a big deal to put somebody on the IL right now compared to in a normal year.
Yeah, I would have to go see like what the specifics are with the teams to know, like, okay, is there, right, like you just pointed out, is there some nuance to it? Are guys getting put on the IL who would normally you just ride this thing out?
Yeah, or they're up there, like there's 30, you've got a few extra pitchers and one of the guy wouldn't even be in the majors. He gets injured, fine, put him on the IL.
A fair point as well. Yeah. I guess I just go, the one team that I feel most acutely anything is obviously the Astros. And I say to myself, yeah, I mean, there does feel like something here where the short season, the short spring training, the long hiatus, all these things working backwards to the beginning of the first spring training, these all feel like things that have had some sort of impact. Like, do I think Verlander would be dealing with an arm injury right now? None of us know, but right. This sure does feel like something where it's like, oh, man, the season got Verlander. Oh, crap, the season got Osuna. Oh, man.
For it all to happen. And remember, Osuna, okay, Verlander, he's old. Andy is coming off other injuries already, too, right?
Yeah.
Coming off a surgery.
Changes mechanics.
Osuna showed up late. There was whispering about, like, all right, what's the deal? Is he out of shape? Is he overweight? Is he not prepared? Is it his fault? I don't know, but he's injured now.
Yeah. So along these lines, you know, if you're baseball and you're going, okay, how could we have done this better? How can we continue to try to do this better? If you're any sport, I think you do look at the NBA, and I'll give the NHL credit right now. We don't have a team here, so I don't follow it as close, but the NHL has been just as flawless as the NBA when it comes to COVID testing, and they're in a bubble too, just like they're in a couple of them, just like the NBA is. Along those lines, Jeff Passan of ESPN.com reports Major League Baseball has had preliminary discussions about holding its postseason in a bubble-type format after the coronavirus outbreaks on the Cardinals and the Marlins wreaked havoc on the regular season schedule, and it illustrated how a similar scenario could upend the playoffs, sources familiar with the conversation told ESPN. Although a fully contained bubble similar to the NBA at Walt Disney World would be difficult for MLB to replicate, obviously because of the number of players involved, the number of teams involved in the postseason, the number of games that would need to be played in a short period of time, thus the number of stadiums you would need. There is a multi-city format, Seth, that is replicating the NHL's Toronto and Edmonton hubs that has gathered some traction. This we know about Major League Baseball postseason is that it is a disproportionate amount of money for both the owners and the players that they're going to get. They need this postseason to be played, the owners and the players. The owners just to get back to less red ink. The players, yeah, in order to maximize what their earnings are this year, because there's no sport that has a bigger disparity between regular season TV revenue nationally and postseason TV revenue nationally. So you, right, need this thing to happen. So this is a way that baseball feels like this is going to maximize our chances of having a postseason occur.
Yeah, and I guess I wonder, I kind of held out hope that maybe by the time the postseason rolled around, there might be some fan attendance. They would have figured out, okay, that these mega conglomerations, these mega congregations of people are what people are most worried about, because you can, one person can infect, you know, several people can infect dozens of people, and then that goes on exponentially, so that's what they worry about. I still wonder if maybe there's some avenue as we reopen so many parts of society that you could somehow have that. I guess that's probably getting a little too greedy for what I want. And if you have a bunch of mini bubbles for the postseason, I don't expect people to travel off to some mini bubble or something. So I guess my dream is dead, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the Marlins and the Cardinals situations, rare as they were among the 30 baseball teams, I think probably scared the living crap out of baseball to get anybody outside of what we'll call tier one employees. That's what the NFL is calling them, players and coaches, yeah, and people close to the team. I think it's scared baseball off of letting anybody anywhere close to a player who could then take it into the clubhouse.
Yeah. Well, and then that, Sean, that's the other part of it. And I touched on this a little bit earlier. Right now, according to one poll, there are 40% of Americans who don't plan on or want to get the vaccine if the vaccine or multiple vaccines come out. That's not enough to create a herd immunity. So I only bring that up to say that there are so many other further problems on down the road from all this. The NBA is supposed to start back up in October, and I don't see how that's
December.
But in December, whether there's a vaccine by then or not, it's not so clear or simple that, hey, everybody, you know, come 2021, it's all going to be back to normal. Things are probably going to be pretty screwy for a while now. And it's not as simple either as just saying, hey, we'll just play college football in the spring, because that opens up Pandora's box for a whole lot of other issues.
You're right. It is something. You brought up that article earlier by Adrian Wojnarowski where he talks about, hey, look, the NBA owners are not worried about the bubble. Like, the bubble is a well-oiled machine. They're going to get their NBA playoffs this year. Owners in the NBA are worried about 2021. They're worried about next season and, yeah, getting fans into the arena in December. Like, they're more concerned about that right now. And you're right. Like, we're it does seem like we've been operating with the return of sports with this just sort of general assumption, or maybe this carefree attitude, or maybe just so ecstatic that sports are back, that it's almost like we're operating with this assumption that this is the only year we're going to have to go through this.
It's just a nice steady ascending graph in my mind of how it's all going to work out.
Like the COVID is detention or something, and it's like, whew, this will be good when we get to January and we'll finally served our detention, our COVID detention. And you're like, no, that's not the way it works.
Wait, the virus doesn't understand the calendar year? That's bogus, bro.
That's right.
Yeah, sometimes I forget that it's actually COVID-19.
Right. Yeah, that's another pet peeve of mine, by the way, is when people refer to the virus like it's a person.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, it's going to be tough for us to bring back football. That'll be up to the virus. Shut up. You sound like a tool.
I do think...
Only the virus will decide that. Oh, really? The virus is having a meeting and it's deciding things.
Okay. I think we should look at ourselves right this moment in the mirror and give ourselves an attaboy collectively. The fact that there's sports being played so far... other than for a few little hiccups, it's going off pretty well. A lot of people were just adamant that this would never happen. Remember, Sean, how stupid guys like you and me were for thinking that there'd even be sports this year? Yeah. Oh, you guys are cute thinking there's going to be sports this year.
That's okay.
Come at me, bro. Come talk to me now.
You just brought up the other
thing. Wear a mask and stay at a respectable distance.
You just brought up the other thing where people were patting us on the head, ruffling our hair like we were 8 years old. Like, that's cute that you think there's going to be baseball.
you simple sports folks. I've lived through pandemics before because I'm 120 years. Go screw yourself. Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows. Nobody can predict for crap what was going to happen.
They said the mini bubble, if they did a mini bubble for the postseason in Major League Baseball. Now, keep in mind, there are going to be 16 playoff teams. So the schedule in a bubble would be bananas, and you probably need cities where there's more than one stadium. So they're saying, Seth, Southern California, Greater Chicago area, and New York, where obviously each of those areas has two major league teams. I wonder if the Bay Area might be under consideration as well. California would seem to me to be awfully dicey, just because that of those three areas I just mentioned that have multiple professional or multiple major league baseball teams with major league baseball facilities, Southern California seems to be on lockdown still.
Yeah, but I mean,
Chicago and New York are a little less that.
I would say it's on lockdown, but if you're in a bubble, then I feel like you could get some kind of an exemption. It's just same way Florida. I mean, Florida is a hotbed, but they're pulling it off. It's a virus hotbed, but they're pulling off the bubble particularly well. Oh, you know what just occurred to me, Sean? I think some of the objections to the economics of having a bubble must have changed too. If you think about how much hotels are hurting for cash right now. So I think sometimes when we first looked at this, we're thinking, oh, how are you going to pay the rack rate in Las Vegas and have a bubble? Well, the fact of the matter is a whole lot of hotels are going to cut a whole lot of really good deals and catering companies and everything else right now just to have some kind of business. So it becomes a lot more economically feasible.
Yeah, they'll take what they can get, no doubt about it. All right, so today begins for the next 36 hours or so, it's 36 and change, just a delicious smorgasbord of Houston sports. We get 1 o'clock basketball, we get 6:10 p.m. baseball, and then afternoon hoops and Stros tomorrow, which means we get two Astros postgame shows the next couple nights, Landry?
Landry.
Yeah, Landry's right in here with us right now here in studio. Landry Locker joins us, do a little toss here. So we get a postgame show the next couple nights?
We do. We absolutely do. Nothing better. Starting to get pretty fiery around here.
I saw your tweet. I went to bed once it got to be 6-1. I'm like, Josh James got this. Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, and then he almost coughed it up.
I didn't want to leave the Dynamo out of that, so I just checked their schedule to be sure. They're playing Friday against FC Dallas, which reminds me, I'm okay with the Washington football team. Maybe for more than just this year in calling the Reds. Because if you think about it, in soccer, they do the FC thing all the time. Which, like, FC Dallas, the name of Dallas is Football Club Dallas.
Yeah.
That's pretty basic. I think I could get with Washington football team.
Washington FT. I like that. Yeah.
I think every team should be named the city and then the team, honestly. I think it's pretty cool. The Houston football team, I think it's better than actual names, honestly.
Sporting KC is kind of along the same lines. You know, it's just, it's not really a nickname. It's more of a description.
And I suppose that wouldn't affect mascots necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, it's the Toro could still be the mascot.
Yeah, well, Toro, it's the Houston Texans. Yeah. Toro is a bull. There's no bull in the Texans. He has nothing to do with it.
Good point.
Other than that, he is a Texan in that he's raised here.
And
as far as we know,
raised,
Landry, I know we talked about that on the show once. Did we ever figure out for sure if Toro was neutered or not, or if he was is he a steer or is he a bull? I guess he's still got his.
I don't really see any bulge. It could be a chick, man. I mean, like, it's just kind of walking around with the football.
No, he's got his juicicles. Yeah, he's a bull.
Yeah,
just like the statue out in front of the stadium. Those bulls are bulls.
Are they ever? You got that
talking
right.
Multiple CCs of manhood there.
You got that right. CCs. That's right. Thank you, General.
That's right, John McClain.
That's a good segue into what you got going on the show, Landry, because I know John McClain is on the show today.
Yeah, he is on the show today, 10:40, straight off the COVID testing, just like you. He's going to be on. We're going to talk about the biggest make or break players for the Texans. Who could be off this roster a year from now? Who could find their way off? The biggest make or breaks. One of the Astros' arch nemesis is just a bad person all around and looks like a complete jackass if you retrace his words. And we're going to go around the AFC South. A lot to get into. Plus, John Lopez wants to talk about who the Deshaun Watson is currently of the Houston Astros.
Okay, the Deshaun Watson of the Houston Astros. All right, there you go. In the loop. Always good topics. Always good banter. I'm jumping on with you guys at noon today. In the bubble at noon today with In the Loop. John Lopez, Landry Locker. Seth Payne, fun as always.
Yes.
I will see you tomorrow at 6, my friend.
Antibodies, T cells, and hopefully no echocardiograms in your future.
You got that right, my friend. Antibodies and T cells to you, to all of you, to Ben Gary, our producer, Landry Lopez. Landry, God, I do that once a week. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig, In the Loop. They're up next. They will take you till 2 o'clock. I'll be on with them at noon. Till then, till 6 a.m. tomorrow as well. Have a great day, everybody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.